That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
It's Totally 80s, the podcast dedicated to the music of the greatest decade ever. So, turn up your Walkman, loosen that scrunchie, and get ready to talk 80s with your host, Lindsay Parker.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Parker from Yahoo Entertainment, and welcome back to another episode of Totally 80s. We love hearing from you, so why not take a second to follow us at Totally 80s on Facebook and Instagram, or you can email us your comments and show ideas to podcast@totally80s.com. So today's powerful conversation continues because today's subject, once again, is power ballads. And joining me for part two of this stadium-sized discussion is the king of all things power balladry, the king of the power balladeers himself, Mr. David Coverdale, or Sir David Coverdale, as I prefer. So last time, Sir David, I tapped your expertise since you're the voice of some of the most beloved ballads of not just the 1980s, but of all time. And I had a pretty long list of some of the criteria I had when I was asking at the top of that epic conversation, basically what makes a power ballad. Is it the vocals? I think the big power vocals are, of course.
Well, it's all the elements. It's difficult to isolate, I think. Everything contributes.
You know it's a good power ballad if it was in the musical Rock of Ages, which, here I go again, I believe is like the big splashy number before the intermission when like all
I do believe pop- I do believe I introduced the show too, my dear. Yeah.
What's your
Yeah, I do the welcome to the production, the producers and the performers welcome you to. It's my voiceover at the
That's
beginning.
You? I never knew that. I swear to God I didn't know that. That's so cool. That's so cool. And then Here I Go Again is, like I said, just as also the conflicts are coming to a head right before the end of Act One. Intermission. There's a big number of Here I Go Again. But like a lot of really, interestingly, there are no Def Leppard songs in it, even though it's called Rock of Ages. But
well, I can't remember the reason. There was a reason for it. And Joe and I talked about it. I can't remember because they jumped on the movie. And it was different producers.
Yeah. Movie was okay.
I never really saw it. I knew Tom Cruise many years ago. I think Tom Cruise and Mary J., who I adore, I think they did some of that stuff or whatever. Yeah. I haven't seen Tom for many years. You know, I did Days of Thunder for him.
Wait, what?
I did Days of Thunder for Tom Cruise. I had dinner when I was with Tawny. We had dinner with Tom. And what was his name? The guy he played in Born on the 4th of July. And Tom was involved with Mimi Rogers at the time.
Wow.
So we had dinner in an empty Indian restaurant on La Cienega. I don't know if it's still there. But, you know, we talked about, I'd love you to do something, so blah, blah, blah. So the winds worked wonderfully in, I think, 89, I'm not sure. He'd made a movie, one of his dream movies, about racing cars with Robert Duvall, an American icon.
Days of Thunder. Yeah, that's the one where he met Nicole Kidman, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. But he was working with Trevor Horn, who I was just an immense admirer of his gifts, of his talent. So I was in a little break on the Slip of the Tongue tour, and I chartered a private plane to fly down to LA to do this song with Trevor. It was a lot of fun.
Wow, very cool. But the reason I brought Rock of Ages, and I did not know that fun fact, you know, obviously you have a wonderful speaking voice, but how did you get to be that opening narrator?
So what happened, apparently, the producers were reaching out to lots of people from the 80s. Having them do reading. So I was sure. And then a lot of them were pissed off when they used me because they were going to use different voices all the time. But we ended up doing a deal with them so they could use it. So it's all over Japan, London, or whatever.
Like I was saying, a litmus test for whether a power ballad is a classic, will stand the test of time, is if it ended up in the musical Rock of Ages, like Foreigners, I Want to Know What Love Is, To Be With You by Mr. Big. Sister Kristen by Night Ranger, High Enough by Damn Yankees. All of these are songs that have stood the test of time and are all in that musical. I don't know if they all made it into the movie version, but I've seen the musical version like three times in Los Angeles and New York. So there's that one. But while we're on the subject of, you mentioned Def Leppard, and I'm talking about other criteria, you—
Yes, where is she going with this?
Well, you wrote a song called Is This Love that could have been sung by Tina Turner, and I have no doubts that she would have done a great job. Oh. I think something that is a good sign that a power ballad is a real winner is if a diva, a female diva, power singer, diva pop, soul, R&B singer can do it. I have a couple examples. Bringing On the Heartbreak, which would be my favorite song by Def Leppard.
Oh, that's one of my faves too.
Mariah Carey covered it.
Oh my God, she did. Did you ever hear Celine Dion's Back in Black?
I got to look that up. Speaking of reviewing the tapes, did she really?
Oh, stop. Don't go there. No, be nice, David. I think she did it in her show. I think it's a YouTube thing.
I'm also convinced that Carrie Underwood, speaking of American Idol, is a closet metalhead.
Oh, no, without a doubt. She just was jamming with Guns. Was it last year or early this year?
Twice she's had Axl Rose join her on stage, once at Stagecoach 2022, and sometime pretty recently this year she's had Axl join her on stage. They did, I think they did Sweet Child of Mine. But also, here's my other evidence that she is a metal person. So American Idol used to have every season something called like the goodbye song. It's like the song they would play when someone would leave, like be voted off. Basically, they would have a song play them off. And it was a different song every season. And there was one year where it was a Carrie Underwood version of Home Sweet Home by Motley Crue.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. She's great. Well, the songs, the good songs, Lindsay. That's the criteria. It's not necessarily because it's from a hair band or a heavy metal band or a rock band or whatever. It's the quality of the song that makes it attractive. Miley Cyrus tears rock songs to shreds.
She absolutely does.
Pink ain't too shabby either. She's got a big rock side to her.
I do want to ask anyone who is listening to this, do yourself a favor and go on YouTube and look up one of the multiple clips out there of Carrie Underwood doing what I think is one of the greatest power ballads, non-Whitesnake power ballads of the 80s, which is I Remember You by Skid Row, which is a hard song to sing. It's such a hard— I tried to do it in karaoke. It was a mistake. I cannot do—
Darling, maybe another cocktail or two, perhaps.
Several. I cannot do Skid Row. I cannot do Whitesnake songs. I definitely cannot do Def Leppard songs. I cannot hit that note in Photograph. And I absolutely should not do anything by Cheap Trick. I've tried to do The Flame, one of their great power ballads. Robin Zander, actually, If You Want My Love, which is a power ballad from the 80s by Cheap Trick, is probably my favorite Cheap Trick song.
I've met the Trick. The Cheaps or the Tricks so many times. I love Rick. We jammed at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It was such fun.
Wow,
Rick
really?
Is so cool.
The year they got in finally?
Yeah, no, the same. I was inducted for Deep Purple Mark III and IV.
The same year.
Yeah, so, you know, and I'd never met him before. Steve Miller was just adorable. Stevie Van Zandt, I adore. I met Rob Thomas, who's apparently his wife and him are huge fans. And my wife's a huge fan of Rob Thomas. I think they're coming to town soon, so it'd be nice to see him again. He said he's the worst selfie taker in the world. And we did selfies together, and he's fucking right.
Oh, man, he doesn't know his angles.
Yeah, but If You Want My Love? It's you got it. It's super song. Yeah, but it's so interesting. I covered a Leon Russell song called Help Me Through the Day, which I thought was just beautiful and very early Whitesnake. And that was a kind of follow-up. You know, there's certain things you can't really follow up. As I'd said earlier, this song Ain't No Love in the Heart of the City, which we did a very unique slow blues arrangement of it, that took on a life of its own. That was just, literally, we recorded that because we didn't have another original song. And it became part of the next 45 years or whatever the hell.
Well, speaking of cover songs, I'm curious, you know, when I've been talking about all these artists that maybe outside of the rock genre or like female divas or whatever, covering these songs, what would be the cover you'd like to see. It does have a Whitesnake song. It doesn't have to be a power ballad, but you know, that you'd like to see. I'm going to make you play matchmaker. Pick the song, pick the artist.
Well, you know, Ann Wilson could sing anything. She's a super, super singer. Audra May did a version, and I'm not sure if she ever released it, but Warner Chappell sent to me. And it's a kind of very stripped down funk, funk bass of Here I Go Again, which is just a super alternate reading, a vision of a different aspect for the song. And I thought that was great. But really, I'm honored when anybody does a Whitesnake thing. Well, Will Ferrell is a big fan, so he would always try to sneak a Whitesnake song in his movies. There's one Will Ferrell songs where there's Here I Go Again in multiple different versions, and I've never been able to find who did the alternate slow versions, just like part of the song. But yeah, so I'm honored if anybody feels that they can express themselves through a piece of music I was involved with, without a doubt.
That's so cool. It's interesting, because even though you've explained what Here I Go Again is about, it made me think when I mentioned Home Sweet Home, a very common theme of power ballads of the rock world, especially in the 80s, is the road song. And a lot of people look at Here I Go Again as a road song. Home Sweet Home is about being on the road, Wanted Dead or Alive by Bon Jovi, Faithfully by Journey. If you go back to the 70s, Beth by Kiss.
You're a walking encyclopedia. I'm diminished by your, really, this is, you're going to send me to my iTunes playlists and see if I can find any of these things.
That's so cool. But did Whitesnake ever make a video that's kind of like was required then, like the video where you're like in black and white, pensively staring out a tour bus window streaked with rain, missing home, like, you know, the on the road music video. It's a classic formula for MTV in the 80s.
Yeah, I probably did.
You probably
but
it's did,
interesting. Last year, I reconnected with Marty Kallner, who was the director of the Still of the Night, Here I Go Again, Is This Love, Give Me All Your Love. And I think we did Fool for Your Loving from Slip of the Tongue. A very talented man. And we just... It was like writing songs with a super writing partner. We both had these creative ideas, which made very exciting videos, video concepts and stuff. Which, so you got to remember, we did extraordinarily well out of nowhere, where as MTV was just blossoming and became like everybody's go-to, which wherever hotels, it spread globally very quickly. Whatever hotels I went in, Tokyo or Asia, Australia, put the TV on, 9 times out of 10, Tawny was doing handstands across the fucking, you know, Jaguars. And the fact the Jaguars outside my studio as we speak, we're donating it to the National Automobile Museum, which is going to be a lot of fun to do. Yeah, it's such an iconic vehicle. Next to Elvis's car, man, does it get any better? But yeah, so it's fantastic. Then Marty went on to work with Poison, Aerosmith, all of these guys, you know.
You know that Whitesnake's Here I Go Again was covered on American Idol this year.
I have no idea if this year, but I was asked to do American Idol way back when. I'm not one to judge people on any level now.
Oh my God. Oh my, no, wait, call them now. See if the offer still stands.
No, that's why I want them to manage me.
Okay, well, I mean, I liked Steven Tyler when he was a judge for 2 seasons, because I like having the rock element on the show. And so there was a guy, I was looking it up, his name was Nate Peck. He's 21, super into rock. He did Lightning Strikes Again. And then Luke Bryan, you know, he did a Dawkins song. And then Luke Bryan said,
yes.
And Dokken doesn't get covered on American Idol that often, but Dokken and Dio, Rainbow in the Dark, both got covered this season. But Luke Bryan, a judge on American Idol, asked this kid, do you know any Whitesnake? And they did a duet of Here I Go Again. And the kid knew all the words. Like, Luke brought like the lyrics up on his phone. He didn't need to look at lyrics. He knew.
Yeah.
And the reason I brought up, the reason when you start talking about Marty Kallner and the video and the car, people still reference that because Katy Perry, judge on American Idol, like threw herself on top of the grand piano pretending it was a Jaguar. Like, people still reference that. It's so iconic.
Well, they might be able to do that at the National Automobile Museum, darling.
Is that the one on Fairfax?
No, in Reno. It's an amazing facility. Yeah, that's where I live. It's giving something back to the city.
Let the record show, and then I'll drop it. Since you got a connection at The Voice with Paul Merkovich, Blake Shelton is leaving the show after this season. There will be an empty red chair, and if you want to reunite with Paul, I'm just saying I'd be happy to see on the show. I actually interviewed Blake Shelton once, and I asked him who he wanted to have replace him, and he said David Lee Roth, so he's open to having a rocker do it. Anyway, I'm just pointing out there.
What Mr. Shelton wants and what I have no idea what he wants, and really it's nothing to do with. I'm quite happy with what I'm achieving, without all that stuff. It's just for me to ruin somebody's life's dream by being negative or, it's just, I've had an experience when I was starting out where an engineer in a demo recording studio was completely unhelpful, and it could have stopped me from going forward, pursuing music. It was so devastating, the situation. We just literally found, it's amazing, a gift from my mother from the grave. The tape where I'd had this very uncomfortable encounter with a very dispirited engineer. But those tapes got me the audition with Deep Purple. So, we've got a special project planned for later this year, celebrating the 50th anniversary of my joining Deep Purple. I was hoping, and I'm still hoping, to get Glenn Hughes to fly up here and for us to sit down and discuss our memories of that time, because of all people, I'm still in touch with Richie. I love Richie and I totally appreciate that he mentored me in those early days. But Glenn and I really almost have a daily exchange. Wow. and just wish him every success. But it was such, he'd had some success with Trapeze at that time. He'd actually made records. I'd never made any records. I mean, I was this kid from the north of England who was supposed to be an art teacher, suddenly. But this tape that we didn't even know we had is going to hopefully inspire people. Well, look what I got from this crappy little tape. So, this might inspire somebody to get up their ass. But to me, to go and judge somebody maybe potentially diminish them is just not who I am. My job is to inspire people, to uplift them, and encourage them to spread the wings and express themselves. Unless the shit in the nest, those are on my team.
I absolutely get it. And I'm sorry to harp on it. I just would love to see David Coverdale on my TV every week. I like putting things out into the universe, but what was the reason for you reuniting with Marty Kallner? Were you working on more stuff?
He lives, well, I went shopping at Trancas Market, which I haven't been to for almost 50 years. I lived in Malibu in the early 70s, and we bought a beach house, which wasn't far from that house. That's gone now. But so I went to Trancas Market, and my, has it grown? So one of the guys who worked in Trancas Market went, oh, my God, let me give you Marty Kallner's number. He lives up the street. So I said, no, you should clear with Marty if it's OK for you to give me his number. And we ended up connecting in the most beautiful way. My wife has actually met Marty's wife in the same market. She's the one who was the still of the night hair, and she did Tawny's hair.
Is it true that Paula Abdul had something to do with the Here I Go Again video, like giving Tawny some pointers?
No. I knew Paula, adore Paula. I still get love sent from her and vice versa. She at that time was doing amazing choreography for Janet Jackson, and she was making the transition from the Lakers. Tawny had made such an immense impression on the Still of the Night video. It was interesting because Claudia Schiffer was supposed to be the original Whitesnake woman. And I got a phone call from Marty's going, her agents outpriced her. This is when she was with Guess Jeans way back in the day, before your time. But she was what I thought would be a real beautiful woman to work with in the videos. So I was seeing Tawny. We were kind of dating. And Marty called me up like a couple of days before the Still of the Night video and said, will you stop by? I want to go over some things with you. And I said, well, actually, I'm going out to dinner with a girlfriend. Can we make it really quick? And he went, absolutely. So he had a house at that time in Beverly Hills. So Tony and I pull up in the white Jag, ring the doorbell. He opens the door. His jaw hits the floor and goes, oh, my God, that's her. That's the Whitesnake woman. And I went, no, well, actually, Marty, this is a friend of mine. She's an actress, you know. And Tony's going, oh, David, don't be silly. I'd be very happy to be. So that happened. She'd been in a rap video, I think. She was on a rap cover. I'd only ever seen her in Bachelor Party. And we met at on Sunset, and where it used to be a super hip restaurant. And she was there with a girlfriend. I was there with John Sykes. I was making, you know, the 87 record. And we just connected very well, exchanged numbers, one of those things, entirely innocent. And that's how that grew. I'd say I'm a musician. And I said, what do you do? She said, she looked like a model, obviously. And she said, oh, I'm a working actress, which was, I thought was very funny because most of the actresses weren't working. I thought it was funny. So
that is key. But the whole Paula Abdul thing isn't true, that Paula Abdul didn't teach
No,
her
Paula came down. We were shooting all the parts where Tawny does the dancing on the two Jags. One of the Jags is mine, the white one, as I said, is just outside. The black one was Marty Kalman's. You know, it was literally coincidence that we went, why don't we put the two to booth? But Tawny did that stuff. And Paula said, Tawny was amazing responding. The camera loved her, number one, which is kind of obvious, but the camera adored her. And she responded incredibly well to music. She had an incredible feeling that she could project physically and emotionally, respond to music. And Paula said, I can't show her anything, David, you know, which was really cool. So we just hung out, you know. And Paula's sweet. Sweet as a nut. She's a lovely kid.
Did you have any idea when you were on the set with those two cars at the time? Did Marty Kalman, the director, did Tawny? Like, obviously, you knew you were onto something, but could you have known that, like I said, years later, I mean, it's been parodied by Bowling for Soup, by Katy Perry on TV. I mean, the song would have, I think, been a hit regardless because it was a great song, but like.
Well, it was huge on radio. We had a super relationship with radio from the Slide It In album. Radio loved the record. So they were actually waiting for the follow-up record, which, of course, became the 87, eponymous 87 album. But I was almost $3 million in debt. Geffen tried to pull the plug the morning of the shoot of Still of the Night because they discovered that they didn't have a recoupment policy for videos. And I said, whoa, just a second. So Marty and I had done so much work. He said, what do you want to do? I said, I'll find the money from somewhere. We're going to do it. So, you know, consequently, I own the videos, which is pretty good.
Where did you find those bags of cash, as it were?
Well, no, I just got it. We got it sorted out, you know, but the circumstance was there was no way. There was like 30 people. I'd flown Adrian in from Amsterdam, you know. There was people, all the band, which I called at that time the Vid Kids, were all people I liked. Tommy Aldridge, Vivian Campbell, Rudy Starzo, and Adrian, you know. At that time, I couldn't really afford to put a band together. And then we made the three videos of Still of the Night, Here We Go Again, and Is This Love within 10 days of each other. Because I was going out with Motley Crue on the Girls, Girls, Girls tour. And I worked with Marty on editing. And we did the best we could with that kind of stuff. Then you release it on an unsuspecting public, and dear God, it just went nuts.
If I'm not mistaken, it was the first music video of any genre from the 1980s to hit some kind of milestone on YouTube.
Yeah, I think so.
Like a billion views or something.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. Yeah.
Careless Whispers only just hit that. By way, I'm like 2 days ago as of when we're taping this, but it was.
I like George. I met George at the Irving Azoff party back in the 80s. It was fascinating. Irving had this crazy, huge house and different style parties around each of the houses. There was like a big dance party on one side with dance music. Then there was all kinds of interesting stuff over here. It was a fun time. It was just really I'd grown up with Deep Purple, with absolute decadence and debauchery. You know, we assisted Led Zeppelin in writing the book on that, but everyone was married at the time, so it was done very discreetly.
Well,
most of the people were.
What would you say was the more decadent decade, 70s or 80s?
Well, it was pretty interesting. So when that happened for me with Whitesnake, it was something I was entirely aware of and able to deal with significantly better than the earlier experience. Because I came from playing bars into arenas and stadiums. It was extraordinary. I had no idea how big Deep Purple was. No idea. I just knew they were great players. Because when I joined Deep Purple, my three most played albums that year were Music From My Mind, Stevie Wonder, There's a Riot Going On, Sly and the Family Stone, and Donny Hathaway Live. There wasn't a hard rock record there. I borrowed two Deep Purple albums before I went down for the audition. And I think I sang one Deep Purple song at my audition, which was a song called Strange Kind of Woman. And that was the only thing.
So what is the anniversary stuff that you have planned for the 50th anniversary of that momentous occasion?
Hopefully, my love, we'll speak a little bit later about that, because right now I'm hot to trot on Still Good to Be Bad.
Tell me about
it. And it is Still Good to Be Bad. Yeah, it's coming out in April. It's the first studio album I made consciously with independent labels as opposed to the majors. And it was a very interesting scenario. I worked on my farewell tour with a super talented, very gifted Dino Julusic out of Croatia. And he said him and his friends thought it was the best comeback album they'd ever heard. And I went, well, I didn't think I'd been away, but I'll take that, you know. And we got Classic Rock Best Album, Best DVD, Best Tour. It was amazing for awards. So it was really good to be back, because it's kind of the media that ignores what's going on until it's like hits you in the face, you know. Oh my God, hard rock has never died, you know. It's always been there. Well, song related bands, you know, but that's the scenario for me. So we remixed it with our fabulous new team of Professor Tom Gordon, you know. We have a great new from when I did the original record. This is all what we do with these. It's like a legacy series of my career, and we remix these things. We always include the original mix, but have it remastered. This is stuff to look at. It's the same house in essence, but we move the furniture around or buy some new drapes or something like that. And I've, you know, featured some great players. And it's the first album I wrote with a guy called Doug Aldrich, an amazingly gifted writer and guitar player. It's just electrifying. So it's been an absolute pleasure to reconnect with that and to be representing that to an unsuspecting public. So the stuff on there, we do a series called Evolutions, which is you hear the basic idea on a cassette, an acoustic guitar, then you hear the next step of where that's going until it reaches its full glory as a butterfly. There's a lovely guy called Chris Collier. He'll do all the setup mixes for us, and then we like add a chest full of metals or, you know, some sonic stuff.
So you're not really retiring, are you, Sir David?
No, I can't retire from music. It's oxygen to me. I've got at least 3 to 5 years of projects planned. You know, we're also, as soon as we finish this thing, which is planned for to celebrate Purple later this year, we're going to start working on the farewell DVD, farewell album from the last tour. And the band was spectacular. I don't know whether you saw, I had a beautiful woman called Tanya O'Callaghan. I got from Steven Adler. On bass, just a breathtakingly beautiful, talented woman. Why I haven't had a fucking woman in Whitesnake before, I will never know. But we had Dino Julusic, two keyboard players, two guitar players. Tommy Aldridge is the equivalent of six drummers. It was, and the places, the audience, it was all very emotional. So I think we've captured that on the recording and the video stuff for people who could not make the actual shows. It's going to be a very defining thing. I'm soon to be talking with my band about the idea of a farewell Whitesnake studio album, and to invite some former members to participate to make it a more complete, you know, Adrian, perhaps Doug Aldridge, you know, see if they would want to come in, Michael Devin, you know, all people I adore, and you know, to see how it would go. But I think rather than just farewell to this current chapter, it's farewell to, you know, a lot of guys, you know, that have been involved. It's going to be a selection of Whitesnake stuff from the beginning to the end. It's pretty cool. But yeah, I'm definitely, there was talk of me and Jimmy doing some stuff a couple of years back before COVID. And I started to work on some ideas which would easily translate into Whitesnake stuff. I've got Joel coming in soon and see what music he has there, see if it's, you know, these guys are really inspiring to me. You know, I'm not interested in trying to do it on my own. You know, it's a collaborative band thing. You know, I see the big picture. I want the best for all of them. You know?
Amazing. Well, this has been an inspiring conversation. Since we're talking power ballads, I do want to really quick mention Paul Merkovich. Nelson's Love and Affection is underrated. Nelson are underrated.
Oh,
they got such a bad rap because of the hair or whatever, but they're descendants of Ricky Nelson, enough said. Talent.
Rick Nelson, yeah. I mean, Rick Nelson had a song called Summertime, which was very influential on a Deep Purple song, you know. We're all magpies, you know. Mm. But yeah, I like Gunnar. They were on Geffen. I'd met them. I didn't meet Paul until years later, you know. But one of the guys I worked with actually worked on a Nelson's album.
I'm gonna real quick hear some of the power ballads that I wanted to just give a quick shout out. Close Your Eyes Forever by Ozzy and Lita. Poison's
Oh, thank you. You're not actually testing me. Go on. Great.
No, I'm just going to rattle them off.
You just go. I'm listening.
I'm going to give you some ideas. You said you
rattle away.
You said you were going to go on your iTunes after this. I'm going to give you some suggestions. Scorpions, Wind of Change, and Still Loving You. Anything by Journey, really. Poison, but not, although I like Every Rose Has Its Thorn, I'll go back to I Won't Forget You from the first album. One of my favorite singers of the era, who's not you, Tom Kiefer, Cinderella, Nobody's Fool, Don't Know What You Got to
Oh, Tom's a great singer, yeah.
Yeah, Heaven, either the Bryan Adams song or the Warrant song.
Well, this is remarkable. Every day's a fucking school day. Thank you. This is fantastic. I shall take this into the studio with me.
And then I'll just very quick.
Okay, you got more. You got more.
Love Song by Tesla. Love Is On The Way by Sug On Kick. Faster Pussycat, House of Pain. Ballad of Jane, speaking of Jane's. By LA Guns, and then a band that I always make take any opportunity to talk about because they don't get talked about enough. Don't You Ever Leave Me by Hanoi Rocks, one of my favorite bands of all time. Love Hanoi Rocks.
Whitesnake, you missed Whitesnake out of all of those.
I'm pretty sure.
How am I supposed to feel about that? That's devastating me emotionally to continue the work of my
band. Other daddy. Songs that were footnotes to this long conversation. Obviously, Here I Go Again, Is This Love ruled this conversation of Totally 80s. Kind of had to happen. I mean, you know, it would have been a real missed opportunity if I hadn't brought my Whitesnake to the White.
No, really. I wish I'd brought one of my cats.
It was a moment. It was absolute moment. Well, it seems like you're a busy guy. So once again, I want to thank you for taking so much time to talk about your career. But is there anything else you wanted to? I'm going to let you have the last word.
Oh, no. I'm just going to have lunch and then get under the headphones and get on with the day. What a delight to meet you and a delight to talk with you. And thank you for taking the time to educate me, actually.
Thank you for educating me. I learned so much that I didn't know, and I'm very much looking forward to everything you got going on.
It's all going to be in my book, How White Was My Snake.
Are you really writing a book? No.
No, of course not.
I would put that on your.
But if I did, it's going to be called "How White Was My Snake."
I mean, I see it. I see that top in the New York Times bestseller list with a title like that.
It writes itself.
But in the meantime, thank you so much for joining me, Nagel and I both. My snake Nagel and I both thank you for joining me for a power hour with
thank
power
you. Very
singer.
Nice to meet you, Nagel.
Yeah,
none.
He's very shy. He's very nervous. But thank you so much, David. This has been a real treat.
My pleasure. God bless you. Take care.
A very special thanks to power singer David Coverdale of Whitesnake for joining me for today's Power Hour. And thanks everybody out there for listening. Remember to give Totally 80s some love with a rate and review on your favorite podcast platform. And I'll catch you next time.
This was Totally 80s. the podcast dedicated to the music of the greatest decade ever. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Totally 80s, and please leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Until our next episode, catch you on the flip side.